Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
This podcast contains language that some listeners might find offensive. It was comforting to imagine that the David Duke phenomenon was an illusion or a fad, that people would get wise, that Duke would hit a ceiling. Plenty of people thought that. But in the fall of 1991, Duke's movement just kept building.
Louisiana politician David Duke has a new listing on his resume. He is not only a former Grand Wizard in the Ku Klux Klan, he is also now a runoff candidate for governor.
He was repudiated by both state and national Republican parties, yet finished a strong second with 32% of the vote.
We have no support from a lot of the major publications and newspapers, but we have the endorsement that counts for this state, the endorsement of the people of Louisiana.
There were 4 weeks between the primary and the governor's race and the November 16th runoff. For Duke, those 28 days were his best chance to become a real force in American politics. Duke was running as a Republican against Democrat Edwin Edwards, who'd served 3 terms as governor in the 1970s and 80s. Edwards had long been accused of running Louisiana as his personal fiefdom, using his position to enrich himself and his friends. Republicans, who'd been on the rise in the state for more than a decade, despised Edwards and the style of politics he represented. David Duke looked at the power Edwards had wielded and wanted some of it for himself.
In this state, the governor is like a king. He basically does what he wants. So I have the opportunity to make great changes if I'm elected, and that's what I want to do.
For everyone fighting to keep David Duke from gaining that kind of power, the runoff was the time to make a final stand, to convince the people of Louisiana that this was an emergency.
In my mind, you had to vote for Edwin Edwards even if you didn't want to, because without that vote, then David Duke would win.
Kirby Neuberger lived in the New Orleans suburb of Metairie, and he worked in wealth management. When Neuberger's candidate, the reform-minded Republican Buddy Romer, finished 3rd in the gubernatorial primary, he was left with 2 unappealing choices. But for Neuberger, it was an easy call.
And it was the morning after the election when I called my printer and I said, I would like for you to print up for me 1,000 bumper stickers that say, vote for the crook. It's important. He said, I'll do it. I said, do you need to know the color scheme? He said, no, I got it. I said, great.
The color scheme was white text on a blue background, the same as David Duke's campaign signs. Neuberger says it cost him about $820 to print those backhandedly pro-Edwards stickers. He plastered the first one on the bumper of his Oldsmobile Cutlass convertible.
I would be driving around, and people would honk their horn and say, "That's a great bumper sticker. Where did you get it?" And I'd say, "Do you want one?" And I'd pull over and open my trunk and take one out and hand one to them.
There were other anti-Duke slogans. No Dukes. Nuke Duke. David Dork for Fuhrer. Vote for the lizard, not the wizard. But it was Neuberger's message that took off. Vote for the crook, it's important, captured the dark comedy of an election in which the least horrifying candidate was a guy widely seen as the quintessentially shady Louisiana politician. But the bumper sticker also made it clear that this race wasn't a joke, that the stakes for the state had never been higher. Neuberger was trying to reach people in his own demographic, white conservatives who weren't sympathetic to Duke's bigotry, but who had defined themselves in opposition to Edwards. Together, the Republican candidates had gotten 64% of the votes in the primary. If those votes stayed with the GOP, then David Duke would be the next governor. Neuberger was asking his fellow Republicans to recognize that some things were even more important than vanquishing Edwin Edwards. The outcome of the governor's race wouldn't just be decided by Kirby Neuberger types. Kent Smith was the student body president at the historically black Southern University in Baton Rouge.
Just felt like we had to get engaged and kind of one of those not on our watch kind of things. As a student, even then, it was kind of, this can't be happening.
When Duke made it to the runoff, Smith joined his fellow students in marching to the state capitol. He also helped organize a voter registration drive with entertainment provided by the Southern University Marching Band.
We're talking about over 1,000 people, you know, in lines. And the concern was that they would leave when they saw the lines being so long to register. And so, you know, having the band there, the band for Southernites is a really, really big deal. And it made all the difference in the world. And so it became a festive gathering of positivity, if you will.
The students at Southern University weren't alone. Close to 65,000 Louisianans would register in the 2 days after the primary. In Jefferson Parish, David Duke's home turf, more than 2,000 people were still in line when the office was scheduled to close at 8 p.m. With 3 weeks to go until Election Day, the race looked extremely tight. One poll showed Edwards with 46% of the vote and Duke at 42%, with 12% of voters still undecided. Lance Hill hadn't expected Duke to make the runoff, and he found Duke's strength at the polls profoundly worrying. Hill was the executive director of the Louisiana Coalition Against Racism and Nazism, the state's most prominent anti-Duke organization. He'd read most everything that Duke had written, and he'd heard Duke disparage blacks and Jews in the harshest possible terms. He was constantly thinking about persuasion, about how to convince as many people as possible to see David Duke like he saw David Duke. During the month-long stretch between the primary and the runoff, Hill got to talking with a man at a bar, a white working-class guy who said he liked Duke and what Duke stood for. Hill tried to sway him. He said that Duke admired Adolf Hitler, and that, as governor, Duke would follow Hitler's playbook, winning power at the ballot box, then demolishing democratic institutions.
And the guy said, he was incredulous. He said, "Well, he can't do that." And I said, "Well, what do you mean he can't do that?" He said, "Well, this is America. You can't just get rid of democracy." And it really sunk into me that aside from the racism of Duke's movement and how it attracted people, they also believed that democracy was always safe. And that's very difficult objection to overcome in an argument.
What arguments did David Duke's opponents make? Who did they hope to persuade? And what did it mean in those 4 weeks in 1991 to stand up and be counted?
One of the most divisive elections any state has seen in a long time.
Louisiana will tell us a good deal about the state of race relations and middle-class frustration everywhere.
Somehow the word has gotten out that there's a possibility that this could happen anywhere in America.
This is Slow Burn.
I'm Josh Levine. Episode 6, A Concerned Citizen.
Hi, I hope you're enjoying this season of Slow Burn. The last two episodes are available only to Slate Plus members. You can sign up by going to slate.com/slowburn or by clicking on the link in the show notes. It's only $15 for your first 3 months. With your subscription, you also get access to bonus Slow Burn episodes with extra interviews and behind-the-scenes stories. And your membership lets you listen to every Slate show ad-free and gives you unlimited access to Slate's website. So to hear the rest of this season and become a member, go to slate.com/slowburn or click the link in the episode notes. Thanks for supporting our work.
Do you ever feel like there's nothing new in the news? You know there are urgent things happening in the world around you, but all you hear is noise. That's why we made What Next? Our goal is to tell you the stories you haven't heard before, or maybe a different side to the story you thought you already knew all about. I'm Mary Harris, the host of What Next, and I love my job because it helps me cut through the noise of the news. And then I get to bring it to you. Together, we can figure out what next.